Politics, sports, entertainment? Yeah, we've got that. It's WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
And thank you so much for joining us on WKOK Sunrise. So we cannot be more appreciative of Rob Center, our fabulous producer. He takes fantastic care of us every day, and so we're always super grateful for that. Next up on WKOK, movie Mike McGranahan, a professional movie critic. Folks from around the country want to know what his opinions are, and he participates in all kinds of national and even international discussions. Aisleseat.com is the place to go if you want to watch something, though, and you're just not sure. He's a member of the Critics' Choice Association, and so his opinions are having an even bigger impact. So welcome aboard, sir.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Well, thank you. Happy New Year to you. That's right. This is the first time we've had a chance to speak since the new year started.
Yeah.
We're going to wrap up our 2021 look back today. Mm-hmm. The 10 best films of 2021.
Yeah, these are my picks for the 10 best films of 2021. Number 10, Coda, the heartwarming Sundance winner about a teenage girl who's the only hearing member of a deaf family. Number 9, Raya and the Last Dragon, another Disney triumph with a meaningful story and beautiful animation. Number 8, Come True, a relentlessly creepy horror movie about a young woman who participates in a sleep study and gets way more than she bargained for. Number 7, In the Heights, the rousing screen adaptation of Lin-Manuel Miranda's hit musical. Number 6, Licorice Pizza, director Paul Thomas Anderson's funny and insightful story about the inappropriate friendship between a 25-year-old woman and a 15-year-old boy. Number 5 is Nightmare Alley. Bradley Cooper is fantastic in Guillermo del Toro's eerie tale of a carnival worker who goes down a dark road and lives to regret it. Number 4, Spencer. Kristen Stewart does the best work of her career as Princess Diana in the psychological portrait of a distressed royal. Number 3, The Worst Person in the World. This Norwegian film about a woman trying to make sense of her love life and career is funny, raunchy, and ultimately heartbreaking. Number 2, The Power of the Dog. Benedict Cumberbatch is a cattle rancher who makes life difficult for everyone around him in Netflix's powerful drama about how buried secrets affect people psychologically. And my choice for the best film of 2021 is Annette. Adam Driver and Marion Cotillard team up with rock band Sparks for this innovative, imaginative, and consistently cutting-edge musical about a failing show business marriage and how it impacts the couple's daughter. And Annette is available for streaming on Amazon Prime. It's a very unusual film, but I did not see anything else like it ever.
No kidding.
That was the one movie in 2021 that blew me away.
Wow. Okay. And it's on Amazon. Okay, so that answers that question. Was it ever in theaters?
It was in theaters, yes. And then Amazon made it. They put it in theaters first. It did really well at the Cannes Film Festival earlier this year, won an award there. They put it in theaters for a while over the summer and then moved it over to their streaming service.
Okay. And all the rest of these films, so we don't have to do them one by one, but they're either available on streaming services, some of them, any of them still making appearances in theaters?
Yes. Nightmare Alley and Licorice Pizza are still in theaters. The rest you can find on streaming services or on demand.
Well, this is an interesting list. As we were going through the years, I sort of envisioned that the film industry was struggling, but you came up with some real contenders for Best Picture of the Year, and we had a good year.
We did. It was an interesting year because there were not quite as many movies as there were in other years because of the pandemic. A lot of movies got bombed or the studios kind of spaced things out a little bit, but the independent distributors really stepped up, released a lot of very interesting things. A lot of the movies on my list are more on the independent side. There are very few of them on there that were just, you know, mainstream, playing 3,000 theaters kinds of films. But it was a good year overall, and I saw 300 and some movies over the course of the year, and there was a lot of really good stuff, a lot of competition for this list.
And this bodes well for the film industry making great films. As you mentioned, they can make $1 trillion with a box office blast that has no significant artistic input, but, you know, it's fun and it's worth seeing.
Mm-hmm.
But these are great films, some pretty far off the beaten track.
Yeah, and that's sort of the good side, bad side of it all. I mean, the bad side is that brand movies are dominating the box office. Your Marvel movies, your Bond movies, you know, things that come, you know, there's going to be another Batman movie soon. Things that come with a fan audience. That's generally what people are going to theaters to see. But between Netflix and Apple TV and Hulu and Amazon Prime, there's really interesting stuff being made for adults, you know, more mature films, more ambitious films, and those are easier to see now than they would have been 20 or 30 years ago because we can all just push a button and watch them in our homes. So I think that aspect of it is really good.
All right. Well, when I was going to theaters and enjoying the popcorn and the soda, I used to say, oh, streaming. No. It's going to ruin film. But there have to be more films made now than ever before. It's much easier. You don't need any film processing. You don't need to have a ultra-expensive cast and crew.
Yeah, it's kind of like in the 80s. If you remember when VHS came around, suddenly there was a glut of movies being made because they needed product to put on VHS. And so you got a lot of smaller films, more independent films, a lot of low-budget horror movies. And we're kind of seeing the same thing now with all these different streaming services. They need content, so they're greenlighting more and more films and different kinds of films to keep people subscribing. So in that end of it, it's actually really good.
Right. If you were an independent filmmaker and your imagination came up with a good picture, you have places to go.
Right. I mean, when I was growing up in the 80s, a movie like The Power of the Dog would have played in major city art houses, and that would have been it, you know, and a few thousand or 100,000 people would have seen them. Today, it can go on Netflix, and millions of people have it available to them right away. You know, so they suddenly have the benefit of a wide release where they can get a wide audience. So that's really a benefit for independent filmmakers, all of these streaming services that give them the kind of reach that they would not have had otherwise.
All right. Well, fantastic. And this is all good news. I mean, I come out of our conversation today optimistic. Good. Do you? Is this bode well for 2022?
I hope so. I mean, there's a lot of really promising films on the horizon, both major studio and independent. So I'm hoping that 2022 is going to be another really great year for film.
All right. Get yourself a smart TV and participate in what this is a revolution in film?
Yeah, I'd say so, fairly.
Pretty much, yeah. This is a pretty significant advancement. Okay. Well, that's your 10 best list. Annette, Power of the Dog, Worst Person in the World, Spencer, Nightmare Alley, Licorice Pizza, In the Heights, Come True,
Raya and the Last Dragon.
Raya and the Last Dragon, okay.
And Coda.
And Coda, yeah, super. Okay, great list. Thank you. I've seen some of them, too. That's the bizarre part.
Good.
That's the idea of seeing stuff at home, is you can do this. Okay, worst films, just a couple of them. We don't need ten of them, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty bad year for some things. Halloween Kills, the newest Michael Myers movie, was on my list. Dear Evan Hansen, a big flop musical. My worst film of the year is one you probably have not heard of for a reason, called Zeros and Ones. And this stars Ethan Hawke, and it's a very strange movie from indie filmmaker Abel Ferrara, who decided this time that he wasn't going to tell you what story he's telling or who any of the characters are. It's this weird 80 minutes footage of Ethan Hawke wandering through the streets of Rome, and the footage is grainy, and you don't know who he is or what he's doing. It's just a complete mess. I don't know what he was going after there. So if you see Zeros and Ones at Redbox or on your on-demand menu, and you think, oh, I like Ethan Hawke, run from this movie screaming. It is so unbelievably tedious and boring.
What did you give it? Zero thumbs? You
never
do. Half a star.
Yeah.
You'd never give zero. That's funny.
I save that for something that like is so personally offensive.
Okay, that actually offends. Okay.
Yeah.
This doesn't offend. It just wastes time. Okay.
Exactly.
All right. Let's see. COVID-19 pandemic continues. Box offices are plugging away, though. We're still doing that.
Well, Spider-Man is saving the box office. I mean, Spider-Man and Sing 2, those are the two movies right now that people are going to see. Spider-Man, far and away, the bigger one, but Sing 2 is also doing well. Everything else is still struggling. People want to go for something that they know. They want to buy a ticket and face this pandemic and its dangers for something that they know they're going to like.
And are both of those just in theaters still?
Yes, they are both just in theaters.
Okay, so we'll have to wait a little bit for us streaming folks. I'm willing to go to the theater soon, but not quite yet. Not during a surge, but that's just me. Sundance canceling their in-person events because of the same fears I'm describing.
Yeah, Sundance starts in 2 weeks, and at the last minute they decided that they had to cancel their in-person in-person section of it because of COVID. So the entire festival will be handled virtually as it was last year. For the second year in a row, I'm accredited to cover Sundance. I was only going virtually anyway, so I'll have more about the festival coming up in a few weeks. But yeah, that was really unfortunate for them because they definitely wanted to hold an in-person event this year.
All right. So will you have to take a couple of 2-3 days off of work, and you'll be in front of the computer and screens watching films?
Yeah, that'll be my work for pretty much an entire week. I'll be sitting in front of my TV streaming the movies that are screening at Sundance.
Wow. Well, that's good work, I guess, if you can get it. Good for you. Okay. Well, have fun with that. All right. So that is that. COVID also impacting Morbius?
Morbius, another Marvel-based movie starring Jared Leto. It was supposed to come out at the end of this month, and Sony bumped it to April because of the Omicron surge. So we're at that stage again where movies are kind of getting delayed.
Okay, well, that's bound to happen. But they'll come out, and if we have a 2022 like 2021, eventually most of these films will come out, and we'll go from there. Peter Bogdanovich died. Wow.
Yeah, really sad news. The great director Peter Bogdanovich died at the age of 82. A filmmaker I loved. He made a lot of really great films. His career was very up and down. He made classics. He made some notorious bombs. But two of his movies in particular, The Last Picture Show and Paper Moon, are certified classics. They're two of my favorite films. He was a former film critic turned filmmaker, spent a lot of time interviewing great directors like Orson Welles, getting their perspective. And interestingly, he was also dating Playboy model Dorothy Stratton when she was murdered by her estranged husband. You may remember that story from the 80s. Great film in the 70s, I believe it was. Great film on that called Star 80. But Peter Bogdanovich had an amazing career, both as a filmmaker and just as a human being, so he will definitely be missed.
Well, you know, I remember him from The Sopranos.
He played the therapist's therapist on The Sopranos. Right. Yeah, he was an actor, too. He did everything.
Right. So, yeah, just a when the AP did the story last night, I read the whole story. I thought, holy smokes, I sort of missed a whole career there. I remember The Last Picture Show. When did that come out?
That was 1972, I believe.
Okay.
One of the all-time great films. If anybody listening has never seen The Last Picture Show, go and watch that this weekend in tribute to Peter Bogdanovich. I guarantee you'll be glad you did.
Right, and the streaming services will put it right up at the top this weekend, too, so we'll look forward to that. Movie Mike, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for all the information. Movie Mike McGranahan, professional movie critic. His website, aisleseat.com, is in his appearance, is always sponsored by Campus Theater Lewisburg.